You're listening to the Cash and Burn podcast, and I'm your host, Brandon Metcalf. Join me as I interview and have conversations with founders and leaders about the greatest obstacles and challenges they've faced while building their businesses. Learn how they overcame them and ultimately what made them successful. The podcast is brought to you by Place. Place is a B2B SaaS customer subscription management, billing, forecasting, and metrics platform powered by Salesforce. Growing SaaS businesses use Place to better align their revenue and finance teams so they can boost revenue growth and retention, manage renewals, collect cash faster, and make more informed decisions all directly inside of Salesforce. Hey everyone, welcome back to Cash and Burn. Today I have Matt Cumber, the CEO and founder of SourceFlow. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, I'll let you. It's probably early, right? So I'll let you off. I'm good. I'm very good, and it's an absolute pleasure to be here, Brandon. Long time listener, first time caller on this show. So I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, and you know, our backgrounds overlap quite a bit, and of course, there's stuff that that we're looking at working on now with each other as well, which is exciting. So, why don't you tell everyone a bit about who you are, what you guys do, and get us going?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I'm the CEO of SourceFlow, and SourceFlow is a recruitment marketing platform. So, which is where we cross over, right? So, we operate specifically in the recruitment and staffing space, specifically looking at any tool. Around the kind of attraction of people, so clients and candidates, we call them, into the space. We build what we class as revenue generating software for our customers in that space. Been doing it for a little while now, so it's also still a relatively new business. So we really kind of kicked on about April or so last year is when we really started commercializing, and it's been a really strong growth that we've experienced so far. But prior to my life here, I worked at a couple of other businesses and helped run one. So our first SaaS business was a company called Volcanic, which was kind of like one of these bedroom rags to riches stories from, a couple of people up to about 120 when we exited that in 2019. We sold to the Access Group, who are kind of, I think, still one of the biggest privately owned tech companies, if not the biggest in the UK now, valued about £9 billion now. So they're a big growth story. Spent a couple of years there doing various things, but predominantly around strategy and M&A in that space. So I've seen kind of the sales process through, I then bought businesses through that. And so hopefully I try and use as much of that knowledge that I've got to try and run a good business post-COVID, which, you know, changed a lot of things in our space, as people are still saying now, but really understanding what the playbooks look like in that area. So yeah, it's my job to make sure that our company wins. That's kind of how I always look at it, and that our people are always in the best place to do that. You know, if I'm not doing that, I'm not doing my job, and somebody else should take it over is how I look at it.
Totally. So like, talk to me about what you guys actually do at SourceFlow. Like, what's the product really do?
Yeah, so the core kind of essence of it is into three areas. First one is what we call core, SourceFlow Core, and that's really everything around website management, very modern platform for that. So like headless content management system with these like customizable architectures. So you can change all of your like URL structures, that's all in there, all the basic stuff. But if you want to build like your own custom categories to write content specifically to your company, whereas a lot of platforms and a lot of the commercial SaaS platforms that exist are very very opinionated platforms, we have a much more flexible and a kind of agile setup to that. We still apply a lot of services over the top of that. So we're doing the design and build and that kind of management system, management side of things. So we tend to attract slightly bigger companies that we'd work with. So we're probably, it might not sound big to people outside of our space, but the 10 plus user space is actually quite big probably in the recruitment and staffing industry. We tend to work from there upwards, up to the biggest in Europe. We'd work with those type of companies and do currently. So that's that. And then we have an integrations platform called Sync, which is, it's kind of like a no code. It always makes me laugh. You have to write a lot of code to make something no code. But, it's a no code platform in essence, where you can kind of connect your website with your ATS platform, with your marketing automation platform, and keep all those, keep all that data in sync, as you can see from the name there. That's key. And then we have an analytics product called Insights. And that is really this kind of like rich reporting system, which will tell you, you know, where people are coming from before they've come to your website, where your conversion, where you're driving revenue into your recruitments and your staffing business, so that you can make kind of informed decisions. Attribution is like a big blocker, as you'll know, in our industry. People just, you know, 50% of my marketing works. I just don't know which 50% applies, you know, probably more so in this industry than any I've ever seen before. And I've worked in a few industries. So yeah, we kind of compile all that into one platform for people and then, yeah, run it as a kind of SaaS monthly business on top.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, in staffing, it's so needed, that type of service and sophistication. And I'm chuckling at the attribution piece because attribution is probably the hardest thing in marketing that I've seen. So it's fun to dig into that. Well, I'm glad you're on. Like, we've overlapped quite a bit just in staffing, but also it's fun with your story of basically getting back into a similar space as to what you were doing before, in the same way that I'm back in a similar space to what I was doing before with Assemble and what we're doing there. And then also, you know, building a company, going through the exit, starting again. So you clearly will have some fun stories to talk about. And, you know, the theme of the show is what we always like to talk about, challenges and more of a story-based challenge and how you overcome them. So what are some things that come to mind?
Well, yeah, I mean, we must be crazy, right? Like, that's the first thing that comes to mind. We must enjoy pain on some kind of cellular level. I mean, look, I think in businesses like this and for any, I've loved this podcast for so long because it's quite a cathartic experience, I always think, but there's challenges every day and every week, right? There's just these micro challenges that exist, right? So this time around, the challenges in our business are different, right? Because we've kind of done the PhD, if you're like, originally and how to do it, but then, you know, landscapes change or technology changes and updated, and we have to keep on top of that. I think in our space, one of the interesting challenges has been, you know, the type of competitors have changed slightly. So, like, firstly, we're competing with the old business that we had, right, in a way, and that's an odd experience to have, right? Because you build what you think is a great business, and then you've got to go up against it. So you kind of need to think on your feet with that and understand, you know, why you didn't necessarily keep doing it and keep going, you know, to double the size of your business, I think is something that kind of played quite kindly to us on that front. But then also, you know, when you leave that business, you know, you know, Talent Rover was an incredible business, and I like to think Volcanic was as well. It does create a vacuum where people can then enter a market. And that we've seen that, right? We've seen where people have come about, and I'm not going to do them a disservice and say like they've mopped up scraps. That's not the case, right? They've won business from the business we sold. So we've had to really up our game, right? And keep adapting to the market and, you know, keep growing. So these are challenges that, okay, we did anticipate, but they're very new challenges to us. And we've had to like change some of our pitch processes, totally different than how we did them previously, and really start to work against some of these companies to really understand what it is that people want again. We're also working in a slightly different ICP. So our ICP of Volcanic was probably much broader, you know, especially when you get to that lower end of the market in terms of company size. The needs, wants, pains, all those kind of things are very different than where we're working currently. The big challenge for us was identifying that ICP and sticking to it this time and really kind of targeting. That's been our biggest win, probably, that we haven't had this breadth of user base, which was unmanageable to actually work with. It probably maybe is too big still, and we might start to keep adjusting that. But yeah, definitely on that ICP front, we've seen it's been a challenge, but it's been a very good challenge for us to overcome that. And I think that's really helped our growth.
What year did you launch SourceFlow?
It was launched officially last year. Yeah, so we officially kind of started pushing it to the market last year. So we kind of run a sales year, like June to July is when we run our sales year. So we just wrapped up, the time of recording this, we just wrapped up our first year.
And I ask that because like our timing is also similar, right? So like it's been about 5 years, it's been over 5 years since we sold Talent Rover. And, you know, initially had zero interest in getting back into staffing and recruiting. And I was very busy with Place and with Blueprint and focused on that. And then the opportunity just kind of presented itself to us about, hey, there's a need in the ATS space that isn't being serviced in a way that we think it could be serviced in a way that we think could be serviced. And, you know, going to what you're talking about as far as competing with your old business, like we're now competing with my old company. But it's very different. The strategy is different. The approach is different. I know for me, that's why we did it. because we just saw a different opportunity and a more modernized way to essentially assemble your staffing tech stack on Salesforce and to empower Salesforce to be more successful directly in the staffing space. What really prompted you to get back into the madness?
Yeah, it's not too dissimilar a conversation, to be perfectly honest. I think, again, this is no kind of disservice to people that we kind of compete against every day now, but technology evolved. Right? This is kind of sharing maybe some of my secrets here now, but I think when you sell a business in an industry, and it was the premier sale of Volcanic, it was like the premier sale in that industry, you know, in terms of a lot of things, in terms of the value of it, which people obviously look at and go, oh, wow, we can sell a business for that much. You know, we can go after it. And it gets leaked, all the prices, these things right quite quickly. But, you know, I think from that side of things, I think what people probably did was they probably looked and said, oh, hey, like me too. I want to go and build that kind of sale. I want to be that fast follower and build a business like that. But I think the reality when you're in it at the time, you're probably not actually happy with the business that you've got, right? There's probably a lot of changes that you would like to make, but you know, you're driving at 70 and you're trying to change a wheel, and it's impossible to kind of change the direction of that business. And then the minute that a sale is talked about, everything just goes into neutral, and because you can't change it, right? You coast into the sale. I think what happened then was maybe there's a period of time after it where it's not yours anymore, right? And that's the reality of it. And you kind of expect, well, you know, that there will be a company that appears and they will do all the stuff I would have done with all the knowledge somehow that I might have had in my head, which they clearly don't have. And they will go in and do this. And then you wait and you wait and you wait. And there's, you know, eventually, I guess there's only a certain amount of time that people like us wait before we think, and you know, like those vultures, and they can wait all day, and one turns, the other one says, actually, I'm going to go and kill something here. Like there is that attitude, right? Which is actually, we're going to go in this, and we're going to do all the things plus 3 years of new technology and new types of software development practices. And then we're going to bring that into the market and kind of launch there. And these opportunities are created. I think if you sell to a company that creates any kind of inertia in that product, it does create space for entrepreneurs to enter that market. And I think that's just the reality of business, right? I don't think there's anything odd about that. So yeah, I think it's that. I think that was, it's the opportunity that presents itself that you want to take with the view of, but how could we do it better and bigger next time? I think that's always what you want to do, right? Like, how do we double what we did last time? So yeah, I think that's a big part of our decision-making process here.
Yeah. And for me, it's more like, you know, how can I deliver even more? Like, I loved being in the space before. We're excited to get back in the space again. And, you know, it's interesting because launching a business is always brutally hard, especially in today's economic climate.
Yeah.
But for you, do you think it's easier this time or more challenging this time?
I think it's more challenging, actually, because the weight of expectation is different. You know, right? Like the first time, there's no expectation, right? When we were building Volcanic and that team was growing, there's kind of like no expectation on you, right? Because no one knows who you are. So people kind of want to see you win because they don't really know who you are. They don't see you as your threat. And all of a sudden you come from nowhere and you hear these stories. Oh, they just came from nowhere.
After years of working your ass off, you came from nowhere. Yeah,
it's like, overnight success that took like 8 years. Yeah. So yeah, you see a lot of that. I think then off the back of that, this time, the weight of expectation is different because people, and I get it all the time, they go, well, you've got a great team, right? You've all done it before. It's like, yeah, it doesn't necessarily make it any easier now that because we've done it before, right? It's the same challenges exist, just in a slightly different way. So we found it difficult there. I think also there are a lot of people that want you to succeed, but there is also probably more people that want you to fail. I think the competitors are more aggressive against you because you have done it before, and they try and use that against you. Oh, but look what, you know, they did this. They ran away. You know, they sold it. There's that kind of stuff. And you're like, well, that's business. Like, that's kind of how it works. So what we do. So I think just there's a lot of people that want it to fail. I think, you know, they'll try and put that pressure. I love that. I feed off that energy quite heavily. I'm a very competitive person, just naturally always have, big into sport, and I've always been that way. And I love it. And I kind of love that combative element of it, I suppose. But yeah, I'd say it's more difficult just purely from the weight of your own expectation that, you know, come on, I've done it once, I can do it again, probably is probably different than the first time.
Yeah, but at least now you don't need to prove that you can do it, like, because you've done it once, right?
It's faster. That's the upside of it, right? I think everything is just faster than it was previously.
I absolutely agree with that. Things just move so much faster, like, than what I've ever experienced for any of the other companies that I've launched. Plus, it's also, you know, the competitors talking that way about you is a good sign that you're off to something important and good, and that they know you can deliver on it. So that those are all good things in my world. I'm just as competitive as you. It's like, great. Like, yeah, talk that way about me because you know I'm coming. But at the same time, then, like, you know, you guys at Volcanic always had such a great reputation in the marketplace. We tried to do the same thing at Talent Rover. And I remember when we were exiting, one of the parts of due diligence was, you know, the company that acquired us was talking to a random set of customers. And they were floored by that random set of customers going, they all love you. Like, what are you doing here? So hopefully that reputation and that thoughtfulness and mindfulness about we want to really deliver for our customers is what's making it so much faster for us now in some of these regards.
I'd say, and just to echo that, I know we both share this view. Actually, customer experience this time around is way higher on our agenda. So we had good reputation. The same thing, you know, 50, we just want to speak to, we want to see a full customer list. And then they audit it with PwC for 50 random customers. Like, if anyone's thinking about selling the business, that happens. So go make sure your customers are on side, or otherwise your DD might stop, or you might get chipped down on value, I guess, at that point. But I'd say this time around, our customer experience and like the effort we've put into that and continue, we've got more hires at the moment coming in that area, is way higher than last time. That was a big learning that we had around, you know, how to do more and do a better job in that area and just change, you know, use that as a disruptor, I guess. So yeah, I totally echo everything you've said there.
Yeah, we're really focused on user experience and the product, making it, you know, an amazing experience for them to use it, as well as the interaction with how we interact with customers. The other two things that we're really focused on is one, partner experience and partner relationships. Like, the Assemble play for us is a big partner play. Like, we don't want to build everything else, every component that a staffing or recruiting company needs. Like, we're not good at building everything. We're really good at building certain things, and we want to build those things, but we want partners to plug in the rest, and we want customers to be able to choose which of the partner products do they want, and they should just simply be able to turn them on. So for us, really nurturing and engaging and making partners successful is like one of the top things that we're focused on. And then, of course, the employees. Like, another lesson that I learned is really hire the best of the best and spend the money to do it. Obviously, you can't hire as many people out of the gate that way, but, you know, you hire one rock star performer, they can do the job of like five people. And it's worth the investment versus being so frugal with the initial hires that you don't get the right talent that can scale the business faster. That was definitely a lesson I've learned a couple times.
And that was probably our biggest mistake this time that I picked up. Unfortunately, kind of course corrected quite quickly, right? I make mistakes every day. Like, people see us and might think, oh, you exited, you must know. Like, I know nothing. I still think I know virtually nothing. But one of the things this time we had, this was probably a flaw of mine, but I had this idealistic view that we would be able to like bring the next generation of talent through, and then we'd be able to nurture them, and we'd be able to like grow them into these incredible leaders like day one in the business. Looking back now, like, what was I doing? But that was a struggle, right? Because it then took so much time to work with people who were like kind of new to the workforce largely and had never done this. And I'm still thinking of like, I'm going 100 mile an hour in my head about how we need to be like 6 years down the line, you know, like what a business looks like 6 years ahead. I'm looking at that, and all of a sudden we've got this problem, right, where my speed of where I want to go can't be matched by these people. And that was a mistake in my hiring strategy. And so to course correct, we did exactly as you just said, and continue to do, where we're hiring like experienced superstar kind of quality people now. Really high quality people, which A, our customers love because they get the best possible people. But now we're now kind of entering that position where we can start to hire those juniors underneath them, where they can actually then go and do it down. I believe in like delegate and elevate. As a leader, you should always try and like delegate your job and elevate yourself to another role in a business. I over-egged that a little bit too much at the start, course corrected, and now the business is going so much faster as a result of that. So yeah, I would hire just great people. Like you say, the great people will do the jobs of five average people quite easily. And that's what makes companies like ours. So that's what makes high growth companies high growth, I think, ultimately.
Yeah, and it also makes you be able to do what you're good at. Like, I'm not good at doing everything in my companies. And, you know, after, you know, I think one of the things that for me, like when I started Talent River, I wanted to be engaged in like everything. And I was the biggest bottleneck for a lot of our growth, where I had to be involved in everything. And that stifled a lot of progress that other people could have made to take us to different levels. So, you know, learning from that, when I first launched Place, I did what you were talking about, where, you know, I'm going to find people that I can groom and grow. And you can do that somewhat, but you also need people that you don't need to groom and grow that are just plug and play and can just hit the floor running. So I learned a very similar lesson to what you did. And now at Assemble, it's like, no, like I want to hire like the best people that can do it. I'm going to pay what I need to pay. I'll get less people, but then that team can build out, or those people can build out their team. And that's how they can scale the people that I still want to come in and build up and help them build bigger careers. So it's funny to hear you talk about that. Well, one question I love on the show, and you and I talked a little bit about it in our quick little chat before we got on the show, but I always ask the question, what do you think founders or other software execs should be focused on right now? And I'd love to get your take on it, especially what we were talking about, which is like the state of like the economic climate and the hype and like what everyone's talking about. Like, not to put words in your mouth, but what do you think people should be focused on?
Yeah, just I always say this to our team, like I don't spend my time looking in the rearview mirror, because I'm going to hit a wall right in front of me if I do that, right? And what I mean by that is I can only control what I can control, right? We can only control what we can control, right? If the economy drops away tomorrow and your business like falters because of that, well, there wasn't much, like there's not a lot you can really do about that, right? You might be able to do bits and save a few percent here and there, but if it's a global like economic crisis that happens, it happens, right? And it's hard for, I think it's hard for humans to kind of really like rationalize that type of process. That just happens, right? Just bad luck, right? So I would advise anybody, and I spend a lot of time talking to teams here about just looking forward and not really worrying about what everybody else is doing or saying. Like, I don't really read the news at all. I don't have social media that I really follow at all, other than maybe LinkedIn, and I'm a post, I don't necessarily read on it. I kind of like that. Like, that's a good relationship for me with social media. I just don't buy into all of the, like, bad news sells, right? That's the way I look at it. And if it was my job to sell bad news, I'd write really bad news stories. People would, like, doom scroll through it all day and that sort of be. And I see a lot of business owners who really, it really distracts them, I think, from actually just doing the core stuff that they should do and the next product update that they should do. And they get too busy worrying about what the other competitors are doing. And I think if you're in that and you're really worried about what your competition are doing, you've got competitors who aren't worried about you. They are just doing their thing, right? They've realized this and they are in that space. And it's very difficult to kind of then start to try and get out of that space, right? But you can do it. So I'd advise, like, that would be a big thing that we do here. We just don't really get involved with what the competition are necessarily doing at all. We speak to our customers, who are the buyers, who are the users. They're the people that we'll listen to, because it's them ultimately that it's impacting, and yeah, our software solution. So we spend a lot of time with customers doing that. The other thing that I'd say is big for us right now is about building just a robust business process. So we're currently, and it's been a really great process, we're mapping out all of our process, you know, like one huge Google sheet with every bit of the process and everything that happens at every point, every touch point. How can we improve that touch point? Let's get together as a team. So we're doing a lot of that type of stuff. I think a lot of businesses buy a lot of technology and then try and like force that in to fix broken processes. And, you know, I just don't think you can throw new technology at broken processes and expect it to work. But I see that all the time, and it will be, oh, we need to buy whatever it might be, some database software so we can get people's phone numbers and things like that. Okay, great. But like, what's the process of phoning people? How's your telephony software work? Is that plugged in? Like, you need to understand the whole process. So we're going through that exercise currently, and that's having kind of transformative effects on the business. Yeah. And I think that, yeah, they'd probably be the two big things right now. I think that people should really focus on themselves and themselves are the two things.
Super smart. And super smart to do the business process mapping as well, because that's hard work. But if you get it done and you understand it, you want to talk about not only informing you what technology you need or what technology you have that you don't need, and the inconsistency with how some of that's working, but also it's like a roadmap for who do you need to hire and what skills do they need to have and what specializations should they be focused on. And that's where you can really start to create some meaningful job details about here's who we're going to hire and why. Because yeah. I think going back to what we were talking about earlier, I think for me at least, I have a better sense of who I need to hire and when versus what the Talent River days. It was just all kind of a guess. Well, I think we need this person and I think they should do X, Y, and Z. Now it's much more calibrated as to here's what the job is. This is the problem we're trying to solve. And this is the type of person that needs to be able to solve it. So that business process mapping fits perfectly into that type of process as well.
Yeah, entirely. I'm not the only person to read this book, but I read, I think maybe during COVID, I read Traction, book. Have you got it behind? Oh, right there. Okay, right. So I the EOS model is something that I brought in pretty much straight away. I was like,
and my whole leadership team, which is Paul right now, reading it. Traction is a great book to teach you how to run a business.
Yeah.
In very plain English.
Yeah. It's a blueprint, right? Yeah, it's great.
We just implemented a software called 90. And it basically is a meeting structure software. So it'll take you through the kickoff of the meeting, and then you go through your quick scorecard, then you go through your rocks, and then you get into the ideas and topics and conversation and actually structure your leadership meeting so that not only can you review and all be on the same page of the big things, but then you can actually solve challenges during the meeting and get on with running the business. It's a pretty awesome tool.
Yeah, I love that. I think the EOS, just generally, that was one of the first things that I kind of implemented here, before the people started joining whilst we kind of grew in that early stage, one of the big things for me was that we kind of moved it to the EOS system. It wasn't straight away, but it was relatively early on in the business life that EOS came in. And it's been transformative just from a structural point of view. Like you say, it is the ultimate blueprint on how to actually run a business, I think. Yeah. It simplifies it down, but it makes it quite clear. So we run all of the accountability charts from that. So every leader knows what their responsibilities are. The business is nicely kind of balanced as a result of that. Everyone knows who reports into what and who is accountable for what number. Everyone in the business has a number. And I mean, everybody. Sales through to development to customer success to support, everyone has a number, and we can see then the metrics of the business and see how that's growing. So yeah, Traction was kind of a big part of this for us. And then once we mapped all the process, you can see, oh, okay, well, there's a accountability issue maybe between one part, the same role, and we kind of go through that. So yeah, that's been key for us.
That's fantastic. Well, my friend, we are out of time. So I knew this was going to go by super quick. So I appreciate you coming on and sharing a little bit about your success and what you're up to. And I'm excited to see what you guys are going to do.
Yeah, me too. And I appreciate you having me on this. And we must be crazy doing it again, but it's all about the ride and the journey, right? That's why we do it.
A lot of fun and the passion for solving problems and making customers happy. That's what it's all about. So
entirely.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone else. Cash and Burn comes out every Tuesday. So please give us a listen and subscribe if you like it. We'll talk to you next week. See ya. Bye.